April showers bring May flowers. What do May flowers bring? Besides pilgrims, of course. Weddings! If you are a bride or a groom-to-be or know someone who is, today is your lucky day because we will be talking to a certified wine expert and prolific journalist for publications like Brides Magazine and The Knot about wedding wines. This is the Inside Wine Podcast. I'm Joe Janisch, a certified specialist of wine and wine industry professional since 1996, giving you insider tips to make the right wine decisions. And today our guest is Stephanie Kane, a journalist and content strategist in the lifestyle space, but really more importantly, an expert on weddings. She has done writing for The Knot, for Esquire, People, Hamptons, New York Times, Brides, Fortune, so many different places, but really her sweet spot is understanding weddings. And today we are so happy to have Stephanie on to talk about wedding wines. So Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So, you know, again, you've been such a prolific contributor to places like The Knot and Brides, and you are also very knowledgeable about wine, and that's why we have you on today, because wedding wines, we're toward the end of the pandemic here, and people are starting to go out again, people are starting to get vaccinated and feeling better about events. Weddings hopefully are going to be a thing again. We missed that for, you know, about a year or so, and there are so many different things to stress about when it comes to a wedding. We don't want to add more stress, but if you're a wine geek and you're into wines, you might want to think about the wines for your wedding. So, Stephanie, when someone comes to you and they are like into wine, like we are, I'm sure the listener is into wine, otherwise they wouldn't be listening to a wine podcast. Do you have any kind of like beginning advice or like a strategy to kind of like help them figure out like what kind of wines they should choose or what kind of approach they should take toward the wines for their wedding?
Absolutely. I do, because I'm often asked this question by friends of mine, family members, people that follow me on social media. I actually just got a DM this week with someone asking me to help pick out their wedding wines. So it's always really exciting to me because I think your wedding is a great opportunity, especially if you're into wine, to really show off what you like. And personalization is just the biggest trend in weddings in general right now. Couples really want to tell their love story through that day. And that can be everything from the music that you have the DJ or the band play, making sure it's your favorite genre or your favorite decade in music history. It can be the food that you're serving. So couples have done tacos and tequila at cocktail hour because their first date was Taco Tuesday, you know, fun things like that. And so wine is just another component where you can play around and show off what you like to drink at home while you watch Netflix, or that favorite bottle that you like to open when you are celebrating something together as a couple. And your wedding is just another big celebration. So why not use that as an opportunity? And so I think it's a lot of fun thinking about who you are and what you want to show about your relationship to all of your guests that are in attendance. There are a couple different components that play into how you can execute that personalization. I think, you know, budget plays a big factor, how much you want or can spend, access as well. We can talk a little bit more about, but if your venue has a specific list you must choose from versus say BYOB, where you can just buy wine at any retail establishment and bring it in to the space, then there are some etiquette rules to follow. There's one really big one that's a huge faux pas if you kind of break that one. And then pairing with your food. You know, you want to make sure that whatever wines you serve are going to complement the dishes, not necessarily pairing as much as you would on, say, a tasting menu at a Michelin restaurant, but you do want to make sure that it's not going to be a bad taste in your mouth, so to speak. So I think, you know, there's a lot of just different variables and moving parts, but it's pretty easy to kind of navigate, especially if you're already somewhat familiar with wines that you like and you want to serve.
Right. And again, we don't want to add any more stress to the special day. You mentioned personalization, and you also talked about how people are always asking you for guidance and recommendations. Can you share any stories of how people came to choose a specific wine for the wedding?
Oh my gosh, so many. I think, you know, the personalization thing, it really comes from travel, I think, is probably one of the biggest. Couples maybe have gone to France together and then they decided to go wine tasting in Champagne and fell in love with a specific house, or they went to Burgundy and now love Pouilly Montrachet and they want to serve that at their wedding.
Oh, need some budget for that.
But no, I actually have an example of one for that one. It was a smaller wedding, but we can talk about that when it comes to budget. But sometimes when you have less people, you can be a little bit more spendy with your wines.
Sure.
But anyway, going back to the travel idea, you know, I think that couples, especially now, pre-pandemic, we live in such a global society and people have spent time in multiple different parts of the world or even just different parts of the state. I've written a lot of weddings, couples love stories with their wedding, and, you know, even just certain Napa or Sonoma wines are quite important to them and they want to serve those at the wedding as well. I also think it's fun to show off where you're from. I see a lot of couples will, you know, serve wine from, you know, their home state. I actually helped some friends. They put together their kind of love story through their wine. And the bride was from Oregon, so it was really easy to pull a Willamette Pinot Noir to put on their wine list for the wedding. And the groom was actually from Southern California, but he's a big steak and red wine guy. So we definitely pulled a Napa Cabernet Sauvignon for that. And they had actually gotten engaged in Paris. And so I wanted to do French wine. So we served a Cremant as their sparkling wine, as a, you know, a kind of touch point for that. And then for a white wine, because we wanted to make sure we had sparkling red and white, we had a North Fork Chardonnay to kind of have their ode to New York since they met here in New York City. So it was a really, really fun way to kind of showcase different parts of their life together, where they've lived and where they've traveled through the wines. And it was really fun for me to kind of help some friends out with that. But I do know that they really, really enjoyed it. And, you know, I was present at the wedding and lots of people were drinking the wines. So I have a feeling that it went over well for the other guests.
That's really cool. That's a really cool way to, like, you know, touch point every different part of the relationship. I love that. Very creative. I'm from New Jersey, so I wouldn't have done that. No offense to New Jersey wines, but not really my style. Sorry, guys.
Well, they kind of lucked out. They lucked out, I will say, with some great states and locations to pull their wines.
Yeah. From what I understand, there's a winery in all 50 states. So you could potentially pull that off if that's what you want to do.
Yeah. You know, a lot of couples who get married in different parts of the country will serve a wine at the wedding that is local to the destination where they're actually saying I do. I see this actually quite commonly in Virginia. Virginia also has some great wines as well, but they will have some sort of local element. I think you see it a little bit more commonly with beer, because I think it's easier to find great craft beers in every state, but people do try to stick some wine in there when they can.
That's good stuff. What's the wildest or craziest wine that wound up at a wedding that you were involved in or helped somebody with?
That's a great question. So one of the things that I commonly write are real wedding stories. So we interview a couple about their wedding, and then we tell the story alongside photos from their wedding photographer. And that's where I feel when couples are really into wine, they will give me every single dish that they served at the wedding and then what wine they paired with it. So I got a thing off the top of my head. I recently wrote a wedding, the couple I think I just referenced earlier, with the Pouilly Montrachet. So they had a pandemic wedding, so it was only 11 people. It was just their immediate families at the bride's parents' home, and they did it at the backyard on the patio. And I think they really blew out the wine budget because they also served Tignarello.
Wow.
because that is the wine that they actually had on the night that they got engaged. And so they were able to serve it to the 11 guests. And the Pouilly Montrachet was one of their favorite wines that they had ever had together. And they felt that they had often splurged on it themselves. And so they wanted to serve that in addition. And I can't remember what the champagne was, but I do know it was a good one.
I'm sure it was Tattinger.
Maybe. Tanjay does pop up. But I think that when you have a smaller guest count, sometimes it's a little bit easier to find some really interesting or special bottles versus, say, you have 150 people or, you know, even up to like 300. It's going to be, that's where this idea of budget really kind of comes in, you know, because serving a Tignarello to 300 people is a very different number on the spreadsheet than 11.
Yeah, yeah. For most of us, our regular folk, yeah, definitely. Let's get a little bit into that. If you have a special wine, like if it's a Tignanello or a Sassicaia or something like that, is it okay to like just serve that at the bride and groom's table and everyone else drinks something different? Like maybe we could get into a little bit how we could play around with budgets and things.
Yes, absolutely. I actually often give this piece of advice to couples. It is more than okay for you and your spouse, or your new spouse, I should say, to drink a special bottle that is a couples only bottle. And that's actually quite common. I personally did it myself when I got married. My husband and I had vintage champagnes, but the champagne that we were serving the rest of the guests were non-vintage. So, you know, everyone was still getting some excellent bubbles, but obviously the price point was very different. Several times couples will serve champagne for themselves, but then they might even serve a Prosecco or a Cremant to their guests as another way to save money. Because again, it's still bubbles, but the price point is very different. I see that more often when couples are working with wine lists at venues because they're already having to pay the markup. And so another way to save in those situations is to, you know, go with a less expensive style of sparkling wine. And then the other thing that is actually okay, and I'm starting to see more and more, is that the family table or the head table where the couple might be with their bridesmaids and groomsmen wedding party, they will have certain wines that are different than the rest of the guests as well. So parents, especially if a family is quite into wine or has a cellar themselves, they might bring special bottles to serve to the two sets of parents versus the rest of the guests because they, you know, wanted to have something vintage or something they've been holding on to for a long time to ultimately drink at their child's wedding.
Well, that's nice. That's a nice idea. Mm-hmm. Now, you touched on something that I think we should explore a little bit. You mentioned what is available. And being in the wine industry, I'm aware that you have to work with whatever the venue can provide. But this may be a little bit of a shock to the average wine consumer who's has their sights set on like, all right, we're going to start out with our my favorite Pinot Grigio with the first course and my favorite champagne with the toast and my favorite Super Tuscan with the main dish. And then you get there and you find out that the venue's like, sorry, we can't serve you any of those wines. We have a list right here of what the wines you can serve. In many cases, especially if you're working with a catering hall, you're kind of stuck with what they have available. Do you have any experience with like working with some of these venues and kind of getting them to go a little off the grid or off of their normal wine list?
I mean, it's a case by case scenario, I would say. You know, I think if wine is really important to you and when you're thinking about planning, before you even sign the contract with a venue or with a catering team, ask them how they approach wines, if they're going to be very strict about following their list or if they're going to allow some leeway. And I think that's a great place to start. Now, if you've already signed a contract and you're really kind of stuck now, you found out, oh, they won't go off the list, then, you know, I would really try to speak with their beverage director or their sommelier who's on staff to give you the best alternatives. You know, they might know the wines that you really like, and they might have something on the list that's going to be very similar, in which case, you know, you can still hit on that idea. The other thing that you can always ask is if they will allow you to bring it in and you can pay a corkage fee, kind of like a restaurant. Sometimes, you know, they do offer the privilege to clients to be able to bring in their own wines. It might be up to a certain cap, but it might be at least a way for you as the couple to drink those wines if you're going to serve something else to the rest of the guests. And then you can just simply pay the corkage for the bottles that you do bring in. So I think that's a great way to work with a confined list. Another thing that you can do is to ask the venue or the catering team if they will order it for you. A lot of times when they're working with their distributors and their salespeople, they can have access to things that maybe they don't always put on the list, but they might be able to purchase for you, especially if you're going to be ordering a few cases of it to serve to a larger wedding party. you know, if they have access to it, a lot of times they will do that for you. So I do think that that's always a good thing to ask. You know, you never know until they tell you no. So, you know, I believe in asking all the questions. And then, you know, if wine is so, so important to you that you want to have 100% free reign over what you're going to be serving to everyone, you could consider a venue that allows you to bring in your own. Basically, you would be charged with getting all of those cases of wine to the space, which has a bit of a logistical challenge, but it means you can go purchase them at retail. I tend to see that, though, a little bit more with couples who are on very, very tight budgets for hosting their wedding, because their money is going to go a lot further when they can, say, go to BevMo and purchase wine versus ordering off of the list at a venue or a catering company that is going to have that markup.
Yeah, and I would imagine that you mentioned them ordering wines that from their distributor. You'll want to do this at least a few months in advance, not 2 weeks before the wedding, because it can take some time to get that wine in. And also, a lot of people don't think about the wine. They're just like, yeah, red, white, and the sparkler for the toast, and that's it. So I think it probably would make sense to try to make friends with that beverage director early on. They might actually be excited to help you out, I would think, because they may not get that question all the time on how to help, and, you know, be open and ask them for help. That's what they're there for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that, yes, like you said, I think people can sometimes leave it to the last minute. However, I do think that, you know, a lot of catering companies, venues, I mean, if you're working with a wedding planner, somewhere in the middle of your time period of planning, you're going to have a tasting for the dishes that you would want to serve at the actual wedding day. And then, so usually that's a great time to talk about this in terms of the wines, because that's when they're also going to have you usually put together a short list of which ones you want to taste at the tasting. So then you can ultimately choose what you want to serve on the actual day. So, you know, prior to that meeting is a good time to say, hey, I didn't see on your list what I'm looking for. Do you have something like it, or can you order it for me? Can we work out a corkage? Things like that.
Right. And as long as we're talking about sitting down and starting to taste the dishes, the tasting menu or whatever you want to call it, why don't we talk a little bit about pairing? What advice do you have for choosing wines for different dishes for a wedding? Like, what kinds of things you'd be thinking about, or asking the beverage director, or asking the chef, or anything like that?
My biggest piece of advice is to not overthink it. You know, while you might go to a restaurant on Saturday night with a friend or your family or your significant other, and you really want to play, and you're like, well, we're having this 8-course tasting menu. I want a wine paired with every dish to have a perfect marriage of flavors and all the things that you think about when you watch the Psalm documentary. Well, your wedding, you're not going to be picking that many wines. Typically, you're picking 2 to 4 wines in total, mostly for the simplification of serving and for options for your guests. You know, you kind of want to make sure you have 1 white, 1 red, likely sparkling wine, and then maybe an additional one in there, a second red or a second white, maybe a rosé if you're getting married in the summer or at the beach. And so the idea of pairing is more that you want whatever the guest might have chosen, you want to make sure that it's not going to be a terrible pairing with the food. So a great example of that is if your menu is entirely fish and you have raw bar, you're maybe getting married at a beach or in Hawaii, you probably don't want to serve like a Malbec. You might want to choose a lighter style red, such as a Pinot or a Beaujolais, where it's not necessarily going to be horrible, especially if you have a salmon, for instance, as, you know, one of the fish dishes. And so I think thinking about it in more broader terms is easier for the pairing, so that, you know, your guest is going to drink what they like to drink. And so they're probably not necessarily thinking about what the dish is going to be at the table. And then that's also really helpful when you're serving family style meals as well. You know, not everyone picks a plated dish. You might have a buffet, a little less so in pandemic times. But in the before times, people would have a buffet. So you're picking lots of different dishes, or family style where, you know, it's big share plates are, you know, placed down on the tables and you're taking out your scoops. And so you're going to have a variety of different, you might even try every dish that's available. And so, you know, having wines that are a little bit more flexible is a good way to approach the pairings.
Yeah. And speaking of flexible wines, you mentioned Beaujolais, which I think is a very flexible wine. It goes with a lot of different dishes. It's a very friendly, easy drinking wine. Do you have other examples of whites, reds, or rosés that are similar, where they're kind of like, can kind of like work in a lot of different ways and appeal to a large audience?
Well, I think bubbles are always a great option. Bubbles, some sort of sparkling wine. For me personally, I love champagne, but not everyone has a champagne budget for their wedding. So, you know, I think a Cremant is a great, great option for bubbles that are in a similar style to champagne, because Cremant is also coming from France. It's made in the same way. It's just not from the Champagne region. I think sometimes Prosecco can get tricky. Sometimes guests have really strong opinions about Prosecco, especially with the little bit of residual sugar. I still think, though, Prosecco is a great option. I would just, you know, kind of know your guests if they're very conscious of that, or if you think they don't care. So Prosecco is another great way to do it. And, you know, these wines are going to pair with lots of different styles of dishes. Lighter fried foods, especially at cocktail hour, are really great. If you're having arancini, or, you know, people are all about the little grilled cheese bites, or like the mac and cheese balls, like that's going to go great with some sort of sparkling wine. And then for, you know, whites, I have to say, I think Chardonnay is probably what you see the most. And I think it's because the majority of people, especially here in the US, expect Chardonnay. You mentioned Pinot Grigio earlier. I think that's another quite popular one, but Chardonnay is what I see the most. And I do think that Chardonnays, you know, if you are not on the extremes of one or the other, you're not necessarily overly oaky and buttery, and you're not completely austere. You know, you can find great examples of a very well-balanced Chardonnay that's going to go with lots of dishes as well.
Yeah, like a nice Louis Jadot Macon Village kind of fits that in-between kind of thing.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, and you mentioned sparkling wines. Cava's probably a good choice too.
Yeah, you know, I do think Cava. I think it's because I just don't see it as much on lists and things. But I do think, yeah, Cava fits right in there as another great example because it is made, you know, in a similar way to champagne.
Yeah, and I think, and again, like, you know, we talked about budget, and obviously when you're talking about a wedding, there's a budget for everything. There's a budget for the flowers. There's a budget for the dresses and the suits. And I imagine you want to start out kind of figuring out what your wine budget is going to be. How do you kind of like figure that out for someone who probably doesn't really think about budgeting wine beyond like buying one bottle for dinner?
You know, it's a tough one because everyone has a different budget for their wedding. I don't think that there is a set percentage, so to speak, of your total budget that you should set aside for wine.
Okay.
You know, I think if you are a very wine-focused couple, then, you know, you might want to splurge on it. So you might want to increase what you're willing to give for the wine and maybe pull away from something else. You know, I think all wedding planning is all about balancing, right? The parts that you really, really want to shine and the things that you can just, you know, either do away with or do on a lesser scale. But, you know, I think that you have to kind of decide how wine's going to fit into your bar overall, you know? And I think that if you are having a full bar where there's also going to be liquor, there's also going to be beer, then, you know, wine may not stand out as much, or versus having like kind of just beer and wine only, in which like wine is really going to be shining. And I think that those are kind of some different questions you can ask yourself to determine how much you want to spend on the wine. Because liquor is quite expensive. So, you know, I think one of the easiest ways to decrease your bar budget at your wedding is to just not have liquor at all. Just do beer and wine only. Most of the time, no one misses it. And it really allows your beers and wines to show. Or to just only serve liquor at the dancing portion of the night when, you know, people really want that gin and tonic because they're going to be, you know, like busting a move on the dance floor.
Right.
And whereas like dinner, you can really pair it with the wines. And so I think that there are some different ways that you can approach it.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, as with everything, a big part of it is who is your audience, and knowing your audience and knowing whether or not most of the people who are going to be at your wedding are they wine drinkers? Are they beer drinkers? Are they the gin and tonic crowd? You know, and I guess it depends a lot on the size, of course, a lot of different things at play as with all pieces of a wedding.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that there is one formula that I think you can use to determine how much people are going to drink. And I think this is really helpful for your budget as well.
Oh, great.
The general guideline is that your guests are going to have two drinks for the first hour. that's usually your cocktail hour. So you're kind of standing around just drinking, chatting, and biting little nibbles from either stations or past hors d'oeuvres. And then they're going to have one drink every hour thereafter. So that's kind of a good way to think about it. You can take the total number of hours you have and then use that formula to kind of get a sense. Now, I think that it's a little bit flawed in that you should always get extra above that, because people put their drinks down and forget about them and then go back to the bar and get a fresh one.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that happens really often. So it's almost like and a great adaptation would be for the last couple hours when you're dancing, maybe kind of double that number. Because, you know, you get pulled onto the dance floor, your favorite song comes on, and you just abandon drink. And then you come back and it's gone because the server has swiped it to, you know, kind of clean up.
Right. Yeah. A lot of extra white wine and rosé for the end of the night, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any rules or etiquette that we need to get into when it comes to wines and at a wedding?
So there's one really big one, and I alluded to it earlier. A cash bar is the absolute faux pas when it comes to drinks at weddings. You know, I think there's a lot of other kind of general etiquette rules with weddings that you can kind of adapt or bend in, you know, the modern day. But the idea of asking your guests to pay for a drink after you have invited to host them at a celebration in honor of you is actually considered quite rude. And so I think that, you know, there are other ways to kind of save money at a wedding versus asking your guests to pay for their drinks. And so I think that the number one etiquette rule to follow is to say no to the idea of a cash bar.
I'm all for the non-cash bar, being a patron at many weddings and other events. Anything else that we haven't touched on yet that maybe something in your experience or something that any like stories that you want to convey or additional advice?
Oh, I think there's so much. I think there's a lot of ways that you can look at saving for your wedding. But, you know, I have some articles and things that we could share in the future about that. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, what you want to do is to just create an experience for your guests. I think in recent years, the idea of the guest experience of the wedding has become one of the top priorities for couples. They really want to say thank you to their friends and family who have supported them, both individually and together over the course of years. And, you know, this wedding day is a way to just say, like, we honor you and we're so happy that you can come and celebrate with us. You've taken time out of your life. You've spent money to come here. You have given us a gift in a lot of cases. And so, you know, wine is just a great way to do that. One, alcohol gets the party started, right? So, you know, just being able to have it available for people, I think it a lot of times like makes it that like epic dance party that couples always want. And then, you know, making sure that it's going to be things that your guests are going to like. You know, we kind of talked about it. If they are big wine people, like blow it out if you have the budget. If they're not as much into wine and into some other sort of drinks, then, you know, maybe you reserve the wine experience for yourself as a couple or for your table with your parents, and then allow the guests to just go, you know, crazy with like their Grey Goose and tequila. So, you know, really just kind of thinking both about what you really like and ways you want to personalize it, but then also what's going to give your guests a great time. Because, I mean, I don't know anyone who's ever really gone to a wedding and been like, that wasn't really a fun time.
I should hope not.
So, you know, everybody has a few drinks and they're always like ready to party. So, you know, I think just making sure that's going to happen and it's going to be fun is a great way to do it. And then, you know, anything above and beyond that you can do to make it feel like you is also great.
Yeah, that's good advice. I really liked your tip about maybe if you need to kind of like limit your budget a little bit, just not including the liquor, just doing wine and beer. I think I agree with you. Like people won't miss the liquor. They may grumble like at first, but they eventually will get over it and they might discover a wine or a beer that they really like in the interim. So I think that's really good advice. Okay. Do you have any advice for coming up with a wedding toast, or have you heard any crazy wedding toasts? I just figured I'd throw this in here.
For a good toast, I believe that the best toast are short and sweet. The last thing that anyone wants to do as a guest, and I guarantee you as the couple too, is listen to someone drown on for 10 minutes, whether they're trying to roast you or toast you. And so I think, you know, keep it in, you know, 2 to 3 minutes, have something funny, have something sentimental, Have everyone raise their glass, and the whole crowd is going to be very, very happy. You know, because they want to be there to eat the food, talk to the other guests, you know, hug the couple on the dance floor, take some photos for Instagram. The toasts are definitely sweet, but I think for a lot of guests, it just feels like this sort of tedious tradition. And so, you know, short and sweet's the best. But I think a little humor in there is always helpful.
Yeah. And to your point, keeping it short and sweet, somebody has poured bubbles into your glass, and for every minute that you keep talking, another 20,000 bubbles are leaving everybody's glass. You want to make sure that they actually sip the wine and get some bubbles in there. So that's good advice.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's actually a good tip too. Tell your venue to pour the toast just before it's going to happen, to pour those bubbles. I hate when I walk into a wedding and the bubbles are already pre-poured on the table. And I'm like, we haven't sat down yet. The toast are probably not starting for another 15 minutes. So my bubbles are just getting warm and losing all the fizz. So that's a good service tip.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's okay to give some direction with things like that. That's a good point too. You don't need to necessarily leave everything into the hands of the venue. You can give some direction. You're probably directing the DJ, right? So direct the wine service too.
There's some good tips in there too. I can share like two, three real quick.
Oh, great.
But I think a great way to save is really in the service element.
Oh, okay.
So for instance, the toast that we're just discussing, you can do a half pour for the champagne toast or Prosecco toast, whatever it is you're doing, versus a full glass, right? Because it's usually just three people talking, or four people, I guess, you know, one set of, like, each set of parents, and then, you know, a best man and a maid of honor, or, you know, however you want to set up your wedding party. And so, you know, not everyone's into sparkling wine, and so you can kind of read your audience, but a half pour is considered, like, it's absolutely acceptable. And then you're basically doubling the value for your money when you do it that way. You can also have the servers ask guests when they're walking around to the tables to refill glasses if they want to have a top off on their glass versus automatically just pouring it into the cup. I think that it's really nice and seamless if you're just having the servers walk around and top off everyone without interrupting. However, if you're really thinking about money, sometimes those guests, like, they're ready for their next, you know, wine after that, or it's about time to go to the dance floor and they're going to switch to that gin and tonic. And so not pouring extra stuff into a glass that's just going to be dumped down the drain is another great way to save. And you're also not wasting wine. So let's be real. Nobody wants to waste good bottles of wine.
No, absolutely not.
And then the other thing to do is you can also just have the guest toast with a glass in hand. So you can just kind of skip the whole idea of bubbles for the toast, and it can just be whatever wine or beer or cocktail that they're holding and still do a toast with you. So that's another great way to save if you don't really want a special wine for the toast, and just maybe save those bubbles for the bar so that those guests who are into sparkling wine can grab that. And then if you're just really not into sparkling wine, you're not just letting it sit on the table or feeling like you have to drink it, and that's not really what you want.
You know what? That's an excellent tip. And one of the reasons I really think that's an excellent tip is because I've been to so many weddings where there's like 200 people at the wedding, 300 people at the wedding. So obviously the sparkling wine for the toast was not going to be a vintage champagne. It was going to be like probably the cheapest sparkling whatever from wherever that they could find. And to your point, it was probably poured out 20 minutes before anybody sat down. So by the time the toast came around, it was warm, there was no bubbles, and it was a bad sparkling wine to begin with. So I like that idea a lot better. Just get rid of that whole thing. If your budget needs to do that, get rid of the whole thing and just toast with a glass of wine, with a beer, whatever. Just raise your glass. That's all you need to do.
I think it's really inclusive, and especially if you have guests who do not drink alcohol or a lot of children in attendance, you can do a specialty mocktail for those guests, and then they can really feel like they're a part of this toast and they don't have to hold up something that they're not going to drink or awkwardly sit there or hold up their water glass, which, you know, some people are superstitious about. So I do think that that's a really, really inclusive way to do it.
Great. Great tips. I think I want to renew my vows and do this again.
I am all about the vow renewal. I definitely want to do that too.
All right, cool. It's good stuff, Stephanie. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Stephanie, if our listener wants to get in touch with you or get some advice from you, where can they contact you on social media or wherever?
I would say check out my Instagram. My handle is at Steph N. Kane. And I think you can drop that into the show notes as well. But on my Instagram, I offer a lot of different tips about wine in general. And, you know, my contact information is there as well. So, you know, follow along, pick up some good advice. I probably will do something on wedding wine soon as well. It's a story that pops up pretty regular around this time as everyone's, you know, gearing up for the summer, as well as this whole post-pandemic wedding boom that's going to happen this year and next year. So lots of good stuff there.
Great, great. Thank you so much, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Stephanie Kane. If you are planning a wedding, congratulations! We hope that this episode has shed some light on how to choose wines for your special day. For more about Stephanie, swipe left, right, up, down, whatever it is to check the show notes. If you enjoyed this podcast, tell a friend. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the show either through your favorite podcast app or by downloading the Wine 365 app from the App Store so you can get the next episode delivered automatically. In the meantime, visit wine365.com to further enhance your wine knowledge. And remember, wine is food. It comes from a place. Enjoy it responsibly.